Mr. Galliano, tell me about your calendar of human history, your book, Children of the Days. How would you describe the book?
It's a strange book. It's born from a sentence I heard years and years ago in a Mayan community in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. One night, some of the comrades there was speaking about the Mayan culture as the only one in America, in the Americas, in which time is the founder of space. Time is the mother and the father of space. Mm. And he ended saying, we are all daughters and sons of days. And so time passed by. I began to think in a possible book in which each day would have a story to be told. And it's common sense. I mean, if we are sons and daughters of time, of days, then we are made of atoms, but also made of stories, each one of us. Mm-hmm. You and I, we contain a lot of stories. So today, may be able to tell the stories we contain. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, we should give some examples. So what you do is you pick every day, 365 days, there's a historical anecdote.
366.
Oh, 366. Okay,
there is a February 29.
Right, okay. So we should give some examples. Your January 3rd episode marks the day when the greatest library of the ancient world, the Library of Alexandria of Egypt, was burned to the ground during the battle with the Romans. And you talk about the one refuge that books have had during war, and that's the walking library, an idea that came out of Persia in the 10th century. Tell me about this.
Oh, well, I should look for it.
Sure.
It's at the beginning, I think. I don't remember now. Yeah. So many stories, 366. Mm-hmm. Memory on legs is, no? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So if you can tell me about the...
On the third day of the year 47 before Christ, the most renowned library of antiquities burned to the ground. And after Roman legions invaded Egypt during one of the battles waged by Julius Caesar against the brother of Cleopatra, fire devoured most of the thousands upon thousands of papyrus scrolls in the Library of Alexandria. A pair of millennia later, after American legions invaded Iraq during George W. Bush's crusade against an imaginary enemy, most of the thousands upon thousands of books in the Library of Baghdad were reduced to ashes. Cenizas, ashes. Mm-hmm. Throughout the history of humanity, only one refuge kept books safe. Safe from war and conflagration, the walking library, an idea that occurred to the great vizier of Persia, Abdul Qasem Ismail, at the end of the 10th century. This prudent and tireless traveler kept his library with him. 117,000 books aboard 400 camels, forming a caravan a mile long. The camels were also the catalog. Yes, because they were arranged according to the titles of the books they carried. A flock for each of the 32 letters of the Persian alphabet.
That's an astonishing story. 117,000 books on 400 camels and a caravan a mile long.
It was the only safe library. But, you know, I'm in love with books and absolutely unable to read the modern books in a screen. I cannot do it. I'm son of Gutenberg, and I need the paper, the smell of the paper, the sound of the paper.
So where do you find a historical anecdote like that? How did you do the research to find these bits of forgotten history?
They come. The stories come and touch me, touch my shoulder or my back, and say, they say, tell me. I'm sure you won't fail. I mean, I deserve to be told. I'm sure that you will like it, and you were able to write it. Tell me. I have a long line of candidates of days that want to be told.
Hmm. So this is really a book about remembering, right? And it's particularly remembering forgotten history.
Yes, trying to recover or help to recover. Like in other books I wrote since Open Veins and the trilogy Memory of Fire, and especially the last books like Mirrors and this one, Calendar of the Days, The Children of the Days. And I'm trying to help to recover, to rediscover the human rainbow, which is so bright and beautiful and colorful, but it has been mutilated by a long, long time of racism and machismo and militarism and so many other isms. who took care of our? No, we are blind. We cannot. We are not able to see to see each other, and discovering in each other, in your neighbors, in everybody, including yourself, all these hidden bright colors, luminous colors of the human rainbow. Especially because this memory, mutilated memory, has deleted from the past.
Well, of course, there's that saying that history is written by the winners.
Yes, which is true. And they are deleted. In the official memory, we have so many women that should be there and are not, and black people and Indians, and it's an enormous list of statues that should be instead of statues that should not be but are.
Well, let me ask about another one of your entries, and I don't even think we need to go and find it happens to be April 30th. It's about the mothers of the disappeared children of Argentina, who started meeting in public at great risk to themselves. Some were arrested, tortured, murdered,
and disappeared. Four of them, the mother.
Tell me about them.
Suffered the same destiny of their children, their sons, and also disappeared. They were never found. Of course, they were killed by the military dictatorship.
And this is really, just a remarkable act of courage. Yes. I mean, these women who, in the face of this dictatorship, who risked everything, including their lives, just to meet in public.
They began being 4, 5, 6, 7. Then some of them were killed, another disappeared, also killed. And they went on, the survivors went on, walking and walking each Thursday at the Plaza de Mayo, the Mayo May Square in Buenos Aires, and using a kerchief in the head, a white kerchief, which later became a symbol, a universal symbol of dignity and a universal symbol against impunity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have always been very outspoken in your political views, really coming out of both your work as a journalist and as a novelist. And And this has gotten you in trouble with the authorities at various times in your life. You were imprisoned after a military coup in Uruguay.
Yes, but a short time, a few days. No, mine was not especially important case now.
But I mean, the point is, you were out there and, you know, stirring up trouble. You moved to Argentina after this.
No, yes.
Where you started a cultural magazine. Your name ended up on lists put together by death squads there.
Yes. I was included in two blacklists, the Argentinian and Uruguayan. So I was living in Argentina and working. I was the director of this very, very lucky magazine. It was a cultural magazine. We were selling about 40,000 each month. So it was dangerous for the viewpoint of the military dictatorship. They had their own censors and censorships, and I was going to the Pink House at that time.
The
and
Pink
nowadays,
House?
Also Pink House, Casa Rosada. Is the name of the government house. There was a captain of the Navy who was in charge of censorship. And some of our companions at work, we had such a nice team of poets and journalists and painters and artists, marvelous. And some of them had been killed, others were obliged to go out in exile. Some others were in prison. And I had to go to the Pink House with the proofs of which magazine we were going to publish, and I asked permission to do it. And finally, we decided to stop that because we could not able anymore to publish words better than silence, and so silence was the best way to speak.
Hmm. But what made you decide then that you had to leave Argentina?
Yeah, and I went away. I went to Spain, mm-hmm. Catalonia, where I wrote Memory of Fire, the trilogy.
Hmm.
It was really written by the military dictatorships of Uruguay and Argentina, because otherwise I could not. You know, it's at all 1,000 pages.
Hmm. Do outspoken writers, highly political writers, still face these kinds of dangers in Latin America?
No, it depends on each country, you know. For instance, the big killer, the king of killers, in Guatemala, Rios Montt, a general, a military called Rios Montt, was in a trial now in this, and at the beginning I had some hope that he could be punished, and it would be a symbol against impunity, but now he has hundreds of lawyers and defending him, and explaining that he was in war against terrorism. He deleted from the map many Indian communities entirely. He was the main responsible for it, not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot in Guatemala. Guatemala was a country with 100,000 people killed or disappeared, most of them Indians.
So for writers, for journalists to report on these kinds of things?
Well, they were on risk, yes, but especially in Guatemala, it was a resurrection of the old wars during the Spanish conquest of the country. It was a war against Indians, a racist war against Indians. I remember the President Obama's speech when he received the Nobel Peace Prize, Nobel Peace Prize. Sorry for my English.
No, that's totally fine.
Not exactly perfect. And he had this strange idea to celebrate his prize with a speech which was a homage to Worth, what he called the just and necessary wars against the evil, contra el mal. Mm-hmm. And this was exactly what the Spanish conqueror said.
That there are necessary
centuries
wars.
Ago. Yes, but the difference was that at that time evil was in the aggressors of evil was there in countries which has had gold and silver, and nowadays it changed the dress, and it's evil is in countries living in countries rich in oil and petroleum, gas, and other and minerals.
Well, speaking of President Obama, you figure into one story about him when the then president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, met President Obama at a summit. He handed Obama a copy of your book, Open Veins of Latin America, and I think that was probably the first time many people around the world heard about you. What did you make of that moment?
Well, I think it was a symbolic act. Just a symbol, because otherwise Chavez would have given Obama an English edition. There are a lot of English editions. And he gave him the book in Spanish. So it was not to be read by Obama. It was just a symbol, a way of saying, President, Mr. President, this is just a gift I'm giving you to help opening the eyes of so many people in the United States that ignore, that don't know that there are so many Americas inside America, and that we also are America. But in the process of kidnapping, even the name was kidnapped. So now America is only the name of the United States. Once in a U.S. university, he had a strange conversation with a professor, and he thought that Central America was Kansas.
Wait, say that again. Central America was what?
Kansas.
Kansas.
At the center of America is Kansas. So even the name was kidnapped. And we lost the right to be called Americans. But we are Americans. And this was the meaning of that gift that Obama received from the hands of Chavez in a very theater.
A theatrical moment.
I mean, moment, yes. Because you remember he was walking slowly all across this meeting with some delegates in panic, thinking maybe a bomb or what. And it was not a bomb. It was just a book.
So is part of your project with this book that we've been talking about, Children of the Days, but more than that, with a lot of your other books, is it to bring back the history of Latin America in particular?
Basically, see, yes. But since sometime, especially in my last books, Mirrors and this one, Children of the Days, are much more ambitious. I mean, I'm not only trying to recover Latin America's memory, but I'm trying to receive and give stories happening in all places of this world. And this is giving me, and I hope that perhaps it will give other people certainty
certainty
that I may be and you maybe, and all of us maybe, compatriot of people born in very, very distant places, and contemporaries of people who lived centuries or millenniums ago. Sometimes it happens when I read, for instance, an old poem by some Chinese poet written in much before Jesus Christ was born. And I'm reading a poem, I feel that this man was my brother, and is still my brother each time I read this poem. Mm-hmm. It's just an example, no? Mm-hmm. But you may be the brother of people, so many people. I believe in the universality of the human condition. Not in globalization, which is the universality of money. I mean the universality of the best of us, the will of justice and the will of beauty.
So how should we learn history, and how should we teach our children about history?
No, I never studied history. I mean, I'm very curious about the mysteries of life and death, and so many cultures in the world that hasn't been really discovered. They still suffer the scorn of the few cultures that pretend to be the only possible cultures. Mm-hmm. And in the underground, you find so many people saying interesting things and having a very, very passionate memory. And I just try to help to recover all this treasure of humanity and revealing it, because it's hidden by racism, machismo, militarism, and so on. I speak when I were speaking about the human rainbow. No?
Mr. Galeano, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
This has been a pleasure.